Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
He's one of those very typical situations of a player that is exceptionally talented, but has the potential to be a bit of a knob as well, for one of the better phrases.
It is Sunday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Boltwood, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Sunday fun day.
And the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Hennage.
Evening.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, guys, and listening to the podcast. If you do enjoy the front three, remember to go and rate and review the podcast on iTunes. It helps new people find the podcast, and we also read every single one of them. Our favourite review, as always, will be comment of the week on Wednesday's podcast. As for tonight, though, in part one, we're going to be reviewing all the weekend's Premier League action, while in part two, we'll be talking some of the news you may have missed, including Blackpool protests, FIFA 2.0, and Mauro Icardi's latest off-the-field controversies. First off, let's start, though, in England. Lawrence, where should we go? Let's go for Chelsea 3, Leicester 0. Did you know, Lawrence, Leicester have actually lost one more game than they suffered in the entirety of their title-winning campaign already
this term? What a fact.
That is a great stat. Fantastic. That's, you know, that's the stat bombs we drop in Dave's absence. Chris, that stat speaks for itself. People are continuing to talk about the absence of Kante, and Ranieri's struggling to find solutions, isn't he, Chris?
I think you think the system has to change, and yet I watched those goals that they conceded. The Diego Costa one is, I think even Sunday League would be a compliment at this stage. The fact that he loses them so easily, it does lead me to one thought, though, and that is that there have been very subtle rule changes from last season to this relating to what you can do to an opposition player, how you can kind of hold them and things like that. I have a sneaking suspicion that has impacted things massively, because I watched Leicester a few times in person last season, and they were quite notorious for holding, kind of just niggling, little things that really should have been flagged up at the time but weren't. And I think that's had an impact.
Their two central defenders were in great physical shape last year. And, you know, I mean, it's very difficult to go from that and then continue that. And I imagine there are quite a few people out there who almost feel like they're up for the challenge. Maybe there's a sense of inertia around Leicester as well. Maybe one which kind of explains a bit why they get away with it in the Champions League. Not get away with, but sort of have a very different approach to the Champions League.
I was going to say, yeah, because it's 6 out of 6 in the Champions League for Leicester. Chelsea, on the other hand, Lawrence, a great win for them, admittedly against a team who, as we are saying, are struggling this season. What did you make of their performance?
Certainly an improvement. It certainly looked like a post-international break performance, one where a couple of the players looked reinvigorated, refreshed, happy to see their new positions. Certainly there were time to drill, look at some of the problems. Conte will similarly have done so. I still feel that there's problems at Chelsea just with the overall squad, the construction of it. I think that would change if Conte is given the time, and he probably should be. I also think they switched to the right number of players at the back against Leicester. I also just think this is the perfect game for them to come back from the international break with. I still think with a bigger challenge, though, then they're going to suffer against other teams. That's part of the problem, is they've come back, and, you know, Leicester have been taken apart by other sides. So why should Chelsea not take them apart as well if they set up, like Kristen says, even a vaguely like the Sunday League way? Costa enjoys that sort of challenge against a back line like that. It was almost a good one to return with. So fine, But you know, still, I still think it leaves big gaping questions over Chelsea and the longevity of a side like this.
I mean, Chris, a lot has been made of that switch to the 3-4-3 formation, and things are looking up now for Conte. Back-to-back wins in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think so. I think what his arrival has done is hold very much a spotlight up to the squad and how good it is. And I think it's, in a perhaps not by design, more luck has highlighted how frail the Chelsea squad has been and how much there has been a need for sort of regeneration, reinvigoration in the players, because I think we've talked about before, there's a few who are just too young. There are a few who are too old. And let's be realistic. I don't think Chelsea can keep just spending money at the fairly frightening rate that they have in previous seasons. I mean, they spent, what was it, 90 million the other year? It's not sustainable to do that, realistically. I think you have to actually start to rely on your youth academy. And the thing is as well, you look at guys like Lewis Baker, who are doing good things at Vitesse, and you think that should be someone in the Chelsea first team at some point, but how do you break into that? You've got to think that this slump at least facilitates the potential for some of those lads to break in, which is a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to Leicester's Champions League game this week. It's they're coming up against a team who have apparently been unbeaten in the last 23 matches in all competitions.
Wow, this is Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That is quite
Copenhagen. I sort of wanted to leave you. I was leaving you the sort of the back of that. Really impressive. It's 23 matches. Pretty incredible. So I'm confident that Leicester are going to come up with a challenge here. I think Leicester may come away beaten from this one.
Let's move on to Arsenal then. A 3-2 win over Swansea at home in Bob Bradley's first game as Swans manager, Chris. Arsenal now 10 games unbeaten since their opening day 4-3 loss to Liverpool. They made it a lot harder than they should be. It was classic Arsenal in that sense. Probably should have been, you know, a few more goals up for Theo Walcott, for example. But you're impressed with what you saw in Bob Bradley's first game, first off?
Yeah, they had a fair few chances, actually, Swansea. Mostly when Xhaka went off with the red card, so that shouldn't be a huge surprise, I guess. The fact they were able to create that stuff, the fact that Modu Barrow looked as, maybe not decisive, but as influential as he did without actually, you know, doing a great deal in terms of end product. The fact he was involved, maybe is the best word for it. That's a good sign. And I think, look, Bradley touched on it himself. The idea that they've seen things they can improve on. I don't think they're glaring errors for the most part. There's a few instances where, I mean, the Ozil goal, they just don't get out quick enough. The Walcott goals, they're not ideal, but I think they're fixable long term. And it's his first game in charge against a very good opponent. I don't think there's any shame in what he achieved in that sense. Give it 6 weeks, and then I think if they're in the same position, you can start to say, okay, this is a bit of an issue.
Yeah, as you say, Chris, Swansea had a few good chances to nick a point at the end. Those chances coming after Granit Xhaka received a red card. He's now the most red carded player in Europe over the past few seasons. But was it a red? That's the question. A lot of debate over this one on Twitter. It was quite a cynical foul, I think it's fair to say, from Xhaka. But people saying it should have been a yellow, Lawrence.
Dark yellow. I think dark yellow is what Wenger said.
Yeah. You can't see the doctor about that.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree because it was a cynical professional foul, I think. But it was tackled from behind by the ball, etc. I did love that Jackie Oakley said to, from BBC, said to Arsene Wenger, "I take it you saw this one." That's just such a good line, isn't it? I mean, I don't think it'll get taken back. You know, it's by the letter of the law, etc., etc. It didn't hinder them, though. Let's put it that way.
There's a potential bigger picture as well, though, with this result for Arsenal. That is, and I don't know if we'll be able to come to the conclusion to it now, is this is arguably the kind of game they would lose. I don't think they had a great record against Swansea going into this. And so...
No, they didn't. They're a bit of a bogey team.
Do you look at it as they struggled over the line and made it difficult, or do you look at it as they got a result when really the previous iterations of this team wouldn't, and that bodes well for a title rush?
yeah, it could be viewed either way. I think for Arsenal, it would be a massive positive for now to get those 3 points after such a nervy finish to the game. And they created so many chances, Chris, which I think is a big positive for them. On the other hand, Theo Walcott was on the end of a lot of those chances, and he wasn't exactly clinical in front of goal, despite getting two in the back of the net and taking his tally to 5 for the season in 8 games, which is, of course, impressive in and of itself. On the other side, you always have that fear with Theo Walcott, that concern over his finishing. He at least should have had 4-2 golden opportunities he should have put away. One he was a little bit more unlucky with. But it means Theo Walcott, despite being impressive this season, is still a frustrating player, Chris.
I think for a long time I considered him a very instinctual striker. And one thing I always used to say is if you give him time to think in a one-on-one situation or a kind of attempt to take on, that's usually how you stifle him, because he overcomplicates it in his own head. And yet that attempt is very instinctual. It comes to him on the fly. He's only hit double figures in his career for Arsenal once in the league, if I remember that correctly.
That's correct.
I don't think he gets much better than this. I think he probably starts to hit double figures, maybe, but not anywhere close to 20. I think it's 13s, 14s, maybe around that mark. And that's just the thing with him. He's essentially a striker winger hybrid. He's this awkward kind of position that you can't really work out, because he hasn't filled out in the same way that Thierry Henry did. I think he's actually a little bit smaller than Henry height wise as well. So their body shapes are very different, but he's been given a number that has a very strong association at Arsenal. Doesn't mean you're going to get the same player. You know, there's numerous cases of that down the years where a number becomes so associated with a player that it's hard to break out the idea that their replacement is not like them and is not them in the same instance.
Mm. 6 wins in a row then for Arsenal, joint top of the league essentially with Manchester City. So it was a good result for them to cling on. I'm sure they gave plenty of Arsenal fans a heart attack at the Emirates. Looking ahead to midweek at the Champions League, Lawrence, they're playing Ludogorets.
Yes, obviously. Did you know, Adam, that they Ludogorets have kept 1 clean sheet in their last 10 times they've played, and they've conceded 13 goals in that time, and that gives me hope, because Alexis Sanchez and where he plays right now, and after the 1-game ban last time, Olivier Giroud will be back. So Arsene Wenger has options, and I can see goals for Arsenal. Obviously, as good a form as Ludogorets are in, because apparently they've only lost 1 of their last 12 matches in all competitions and won 8 of those, I still think Arsenal will come off the back of that with a good performance. So I think Arsenal come away with a win here, and they're at home at the Emirates, so good.
In the league then, Arsenal still above Spurs, despite Mauricio Pochettino's team maintaining their unbeaten start to the season with a point at West Brom. Former Spurs man Nasser Chadli opening the scoring. He reacted quickest after Hugo Lloris saved, it was a world-class save essentially, from a corner. He pounced to give West Brom the opening. Dele Alli poked home the equaliser, his 3rd goal in his last 5 games, meaning Spurs are now within a point of Manchester City. Not too much to say about this one, Chris. I mean, Spurs march on.
Gary Lineker raised a fairly interesting point about Nasser Chadli and whether Spurs might regret letting him go. I'm going to guess the best person to ask this really is, as a Spurs fan, are you at all disappointed to see him go, or was it purely a case of he was just never going to be the right fit for you guys and what you needed?
I was a little bit disappointed to see him go, because I am a fan of Nasser Chadli. I think there were the doubts over how clinical he could be. Obviously, he's proven that wrong at West Brom. He scored as many goals, you know, at the start of this season as he did in the past, I think, 30 games for Spurs. But I think he needed to move on to get that chance, really, to be playing week in, week out, and to be in the starting 11. I think him moving on has given people like Heung-min Son a chance in the starting lineup for Spurs. So, you know, I think it's easy to say, you look at the way he's performing and say, maybe we should have kept him. But I think at the end of the day, it suited all parties, essentially. So
he didn't play centrally often either, did he?
No. He was always on the left. Usually on the left. But that's obviously where Heung-min Son has sort of started a few games this season. So I'm not too upset. I was upset to see him score. He did the old classic, I'm not going to celebrate, sort of half celebration. But Spurs, 3rd in the league now. Of course, travelling to Leverkusen on Tuesday night
aiming to get the 3 points that would mean, well, be a big step towards them reaching the knockout stages. They're currently second in their group with 3 points behind Monaco. They'll be looking to build on that win against CSKA, that vital win at CSKA in the Champions League. Leverkusen, a tough opponent, but I'm feeling confident.
This one's true. I mean, Leverkusen are 10 matches. They're 10 matches unbeaten at home, Adam.
Oh, bloody hell.
And they've won 7 of those.
Oh, bloody hell. Now I'm not so
confident. Read these up a bloody UEFA script.
Now I'm not so confident anymore. How do you think it's going to go, Lawrence? Who's your money on?
If Spurs, we'll put it this way, if Spurs still had Nasser Chadli, I'd pile all my money on.
Then they'd be absolutely sure thing to win.
I mean, obviously I like Leverkusen. You know, there might be a bit of a hipster choice in the Champions League this season, but Spurs could also be marketed. Both these sides could be marketed as the hipster's choice somewhat this season in the Champions League. Not least because Wembley is one of the more beautiful places. Which way do I choose? I want to choose England to win. England win this one. 2-1, and end that unbeaten run.
Cautiously optimistic, then, we'll say. I want to move on, Lawrence, to talk about Stoke 2, Sunderland 0, and specifically Joe Allen. Once the Welsh Xavi, he's now the Welsh Messi, Lawrence. A change of position for him from Mark Hughes, and he's thriving at Stoke.
Yeah, I mean, I think in looking to sell Joe Allen, Liverpool sort of freed him up from what he'd been at Liverpool, which was a sort of a vaguely maligned player because he never, you know, he could never play in the advanced role that maybe he probably wanted to. He was always seen as playing a little bit deeper. I think Klopp saw a lot of his qualities, and Liverpool saw some of his better attacking football. And I think he eventually, it must have been a frustrating experience because I imagine that he knew what he could achieve but wasn't always allowed to do that at Liverpool because there were always people who seemed to be ahead of him in the pecking order. Like you say, his position changed when he went to Stoke. And I don't actually think of the position that he gets into as particularly Joe Allen positions now, but when you look at it, then it's very clear that he's been given an MO out on the pitch, and I think that is working for the side now. A lot of things go to and through him, and it's really satisfying to watch because essentially what we're seeing is Brendan Rodgers being vindicated on his use of the phrase Welsh Xavi.
The Welsh Xavi.
But very rarely in the game can we say that Brendan Rodgers is vindicated. Let's do it as often as
possible. Let's celebrate it the few times we can do it.
Let's celebrate vindication. The Vindication of Brendan Rodgers, which is also what I believe his own autobiography will be called.
That would be fantastic. That really would. It was the first win of the season for Stoke, of course, Chris. A big game. It was a relegation six-pointer with Sunderland down there as well. That is their sixth loss of the season for Sunderland, though. Things looking ever bleaker for the Black Cats.
Yeah, there's some nasty stats right now. I mean, Newcastle actually won a Premier League game more recently than Sunderland did. That's how bad it is, I think.
Funny how you've got that one out.
I think there's one. This is the first time since 1905, 1906 that a team in the top division has failed to win any of their opening six games for 3 years in a row. Their slow start is... it's dangerous in its consistency, and I think when it does eventually cost them and they're relegated, because I do think they will be relegated, we'll look to that as a really worrying trend through all the seasons. And, you know, it's perhaps timely in all the wrong ways that Gus Poyet spoke to Sid Lowe, I want to say last week. Yeah. And obviously he's been, you know, he's been in the belly of the beast, and he makes some valid points in the piece about, you know, if you start from zero every summer, you're going to stay at zero. And he's right. There's never been the opportunity to build anything even remotely substantial there. And I mean, look, we've talked about the amount of money wasted down the years with Sunderland and things like that. It's just a club that... it's a club for me that even its foundations have major cracks in them. And that's a real concern. It's a shame because, again, I think there are a lot of good people at that club. It has a lot of potential. Largely founded in the support, realistically. But it just never seems to come to fruition. And it's quite frustrating, honestly. It is. It's quite frustrating to watch.
Do you want to get someone in who's sort of an old an old hand at keeping teams up? Do you have a problem? There's only one man that you need to get in at this point, and we all know he's out of a job because he very publicly lost one not long ago. It's big Ham Allardyce.
There's only one answer. He is the answer. I think so. Sunderland fans are probably taking back, do you reckon?
I mean, I think he's pretty busy doing speeches out in other countries at the moment. But,
oh, yeah, is that gone for
probably. I imagine it wouldn't be the most terrible PR thing for him to be out there, sort of, you know, just showing what he can do, what you're missing out on. You know, like when you see freshly broken up couples who sort of go and post stuff on Instagram, like, never been happier. You know, you imagine that Big Sam would have a similar shaped Instagram right now. Feeling fresh, feeling frisky.
I would love to see that. Let's talk about Bournemouth 6, Hull City 1. The biggest result of the weekend in terms of scoreline, Chris. I mean, as good as Bournemouth were, Hull were abysmal.
For me, it's so hard to look past the summer and what the owner did do, well, more specifically what he didn't do, which was back the team financially. And that last few days where they were signing like 4 or 5 players in the space of a few hours, it was just criminal. Whenever we look at the newly promoted sides that stay up, so often it's because they had a fairly meticulous and detailed plan for the summer on how to sign players, who to sign, backups to the prime targets, etc., etc. And Hull just didn't have any of that. And again, to almost mirror the answer that I gave relative to Sunderland, it's a shame because I don't think any set of supporters deserve that. I think they deserve the sporting integrity that their ownership should support the team financially. And the idea that, you know, they were in the midst of selling the club, so why put money in? I just think that is, it's just bad form, essentially. Yes, it's you know, is it the Big Lebowski that quote is from? You know, you're not wrong, but you're a thing.
You can say it.
To me, that's what that is. It's the idea of, why are you screwing over the supporters? Granted, I don't think they've had the best relationship during his tenure there because he wanted to change the name and things like that. But even still, it's not pretty. And you saw that today with the fact that, again, a lot of their team, without wishing to sound too cruel with it, a lot of their team are Championship players. They're really not Premier League players. And when you bring in someone like Ryan Mason to be the conductor of that orchestra, I don't think you're going to have a very strong season, which is no disrespect to him. I just don't think he's built for that position right now. I think he could be moving down the line, but where he's at now, the amount of game time he's had as a starter consistently week in, week out, I don't think he's ready for that leading role.
It's quite a turnaround for Mike Phelan, who's Premier League manager a month in August. They're now without a win since August, Hull, in Phelan's first permanent game. Yeah. This result comes along, 17 goals conceded in the last 4 matches. The defence is obviously the big problem, Lawrence.
What makes you think that?
He tried to shift things around. He brought in Harry Maguire, who ended up losing possession 13 times in the game, which definitely didn't help. But is there a way for Mike Phelan to try and shore things up until January, where they need to try and bring in some bodies there, maybe some experience? Or
I don't see how they can get out of it, really. They don't really seem to have enough personnel who are experienced in that in any of the positions. It's very clear that they are trying, that there are things that Phelan's trying. I think he said it in a post-match interview. His ideas are maybe a little bit too elaborate, which can sound like a humble brag. But I assure you, I don't think Phelan is that sort of guy. Maybe I'm too clever for these guys. Yeah, no one's saying that. But I think at the same time, they came up against a side who I think a lot of people have been waiting to unleash on another team. And I think Bournemouth sort of saw this as a way to flex their muscles a little bit. You know, because they've got some players in that side that they don't want to show off, but I think they are also showboats a little bit, or they sort of want to show their prowess. You know, Jordan Ibe, Stanislas, not least Wilson. I think it was quite a satisfying, I think it was more of a satisfying performance for Bournemouth than it was for Hull City. I just feel sorry for them. They have such a small squad. That recovery time is going to be really difficult for them, no matter if they have a week or not. There's not going to be any rotation really within the team, realistically.
Yes. and the big game against Stoke coming up next. Obviously, Stoke will be looking to build on that win, as we just spoke about, so we'll see if Hull can turn things around. Elsewhere this weekend, Man City dropping points at home to Everton. What do you make of this one, Lawrence? Two missed penalties, much to the chagrin of fantasy managers everywhere. Kevin De Bruyne missing first, and then Aguero.
Unless, of course, people always think of the attackers in these situations. No one ever thinks of the goalkeepers, do they? Huh?
That's very true, but
Steckelenburg,
I'd say Steckelenburg is a rare pick.
Maybe not for an Everton fan. And that's also the weekends where it becomes a little bit, maybe it becomes a little bit more unpredictable. I kind of like that. Thanks, FanDuel. You know, I think also that was sort of a funny preview. I was actually listening to the Football Ramble preview post games, and one of them they said, Sergio Aguero missed a penalty whilst away on international duty. Do you think that'll have any bearing on the game? And they were like, nah, probably not. And obviously he did. Obviously that's going to be frustrating. I think Pep sort of spoke about this. You know, there are going to be days like this where we're going to have things, problems like this with teams. I guess the problem for Pep is that actually when he's been tested, it's been a couple of times where he's not, his team hasn't stood up to the test. But I think Chris has made the salient point on the podcast that seems less to do with the system very often and more to do with individual errors, or more to do with sort of small things that happen within the wider picture. So, you know, I'd just be careful as to writing City off. I think Pep's always a much bigger picture man, and it sort of causes you to have to look in the same way. Koeman's going to be very happy, though, because, you know, the system works. But I guess the problem is that within that system, he's got the same problem as Pep, that the individual mistakes almost cost them the game.
It's obviously, they're still top of the league, Chris. I don't think anyone's writing off Manchester City, but in terms of struggling to win that game, in terms of struggling to break Everton down, I mean, are there any concerns for you losing to Tottenham last week, now the draw against Everton?
I made a comment to Jonas I was sitting next to you at Newcastle Brentford yesterday when they went 1-0 behind, and it's the idea that there are some weekends you've just got to lose, you can't win every weekend. Having watched the game, I think you have to give immense credit to Everton for the way they prepared. I think they knew exactly what they wanted to do with that game. I don't think there was any fortune in it. Of course, there's an air of individual brilliance about Steckelenburg that I don't think you will face every week. That's important to note. As I say, I think you have to give it the context of it's a draw that we're treating like a loss. And I think that microcosm within itself tells you about the standard that we're holding Guardiola to. And I think to a degree, it's almost an unattainable standard because we are expecting him to blow away all of the competition. And that's just not realistically achievable. Even the best team this league's ever had, in inverted commas, only went unbeaten this season. They didn't win every game. They still drew matches as well. So, you know, I think just needs a little bit of common sense applied to it at times.
City without a win in three in all competitions, then coming up, of course, against Barcelona midweek. Guardiola returning to the camp now. A game everyone's looking forward to, Chris. I mean, how do you think Guardiola is going to approach this one? He's described his former team as machines going into this game, says he's expecting them, of course, to dominate possession.
It's for me, it is a fantastically fascinating game because of what it represents. Someone that was seen as the instigator of a huge part of Barcelona's recent history against the person that is now trying to move it forward into that next generation. And theoretically, assuming he stays there for a few more years, will have to phase out many of the key components of the side that Guardiola built in the first place.
Previews up for Barcelona and Manchester City later in the week, as with all of our other Champions League stuff. So go over there on, I want to say Tuesday, and you'll see them on Twitter.
Ooh, Twitter video. Yeah. I love it.
Twitter video is the way to go now. It's much more rewarding.
Elsewhere, Crystal Palace somehow got beaten by West Ham 1-0. Lawrence.
No one knows how this happened. Just move on.
No one knows how it happened. It's a mystery.
No one knows how things like this happen. Apart from the fact that obviously two managers who very often live on the edge came up against each other. It was an exciting game, actually. Don't let the red card fool you, actually, because I think a lot of people sort of feel like Crespo was unfairly treated, if you like. Really exciting match. And obviously, Benteke also missed a penalty within that. So a lot of missed penalties this weekend. You know what? It was bloody exciting to be a West Ham fan, because I think a lot of West Ham fans are sort of frustrated about having to be at home because they're toxic atmosphere. And as soon as someone says the atmosphere is toxic, then the atmosphere becomes even more toxic. I think they're very happy to be away. And I think ultimately it's also very exciting or slash good that it was someone who, apart from Payet, who was the draw. And actually, I think in this game, I'm right in saying that Payet was subbed off. Payet was subbed off in the 78th minute. Some positives there for West Ham against a side who are notoriously up and down. So again, don't take too much from this one. I don't know if it's going to lead to a long-term trend.
Second win of the season for them. They're coming up against Sunderland at home next. So you expect them to get another 3 points and get back-to-back wins for the first time this season and look to build on that.
Hey guys, how you doing? We're just going to pause the podcast for just a second so we can talk about our sponsors, FanDuel. Great guys down at FanDuel. And they're running lots of competitions during Champions League week. Chris, you know it's good to enter during the Champions League week because you get a bit more choice outside of your own league, right?
Yeah, exactly. And more importantly, you can put your knowledge really to the test because you've got so many competing forces, so many different countries. It's one for the real tipster to kind of make some easy cash.
Well, if you think you're a real tipster, then you can get into the £3,000 Tuesday Trophy division, which is it's a good competition. It's only £5 to enter, and you stand to win part of that £3,000 in cash prize. So, Chris, if we're going to give him one recommendation this week, I'm going to give you a big name that you can pick, and you can tell me who you go for. Cristiano Ronaldo, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, G. Bale, Higuain, or, and get this one, Ben Yedder. Sevilla versus Leon. You got an outside name there. I'll put that one in. Just below him, you could also have Dybala, who's also playing pretty well at the moment. So who would you go for then?
Give me some good candidates. You've got Higuain and Dybala going to Lyon. Got Ben Yedder, Dinamo Zagreb. That's a scorable game, which is, I think, a new phrase that we've just coined for this.
Yeah, it's a scorable. And then don't forget, actually, this is the thing that gets me a little bit with Real Madrid, is they're playing Legia, who have become somewhat of the, I don't want to say whipping boys, but...
You're going to say whipping boys.
But they're not strong.
They've struggled. Yeah. They've stumbled in European competition, mm-hmm. I believe is how their press officer would say.
True say.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you just want to go for Real Madrid because it's so obvious.
Did you go for Ronaldo? That's what I'm questioning at this point.
Ronaldo is frighteningly consistent in this competition.
Yeah, so that's going to be our recommendation this week. As if you needed us to tell you, you should go with Cristiano Ronaldo in FanDuel.
But this is where it gets really interesting, is how deep an anorak do you want to go into this? Because obviously last week, Ronaldo had his big argument in training with Marcelo and co. So could that see Bale be the most likely? This is where your knowledge comes in. This is where your gut is firmly tested. So,
and yeah, that's a good point, actually. You've got to go with your gut on FanDuel, because Ronaldo scored the last of the six goals that Real Madrid scored on the weekend. So is it sort of the crowning redemption for him? And obviously Isco had a great performance, scoring two goals. So there's a few choices in there for you. I'm still going Cristiano, because I think it's the kind of narrative that Cristiano Ronaldo comes through on. But maybe you guys want to go with Bale. Either way, go and enter the £3,000 Tuesday trophy to win your share of £3,000. Not least that, but I can also encourage you to go on a Wednesday to the Wednesday War Chest. I love the way that they put the alliteration in here. Anyway, we will now let you get back to the podcast. But if you do head over to fanduel.co.uk and put in the code IAMTHEHOLE when you sign up, that's IAMTHEHOLE, then you guys will be doing us a huge favour, and at the same time, you'll get a great offer from FanDuel. A lot of terms and conditions apply. You have to be A, in the UK, and B, over the age of 18. But apart from that, it's actually pretty straightforward and simple. So get yourself over there, fanduel.co.uk, and see what offer is waiting for you when you put in the code IAMTheHole.
Let us know how you get on.
Elsewhere, Chris, Southampton today winning 3-1 against Burnley. Charlie Austin with two goals against his former club.
Yeah, he was all right today, wasn't he, Austin? He was pretty useless in the first half, but he seemed to pick himself up by the second. I like Southampton. I think they can really fly under the radar this season. There's some components in there that have been shrewdly acquired. I think Højbjerg, Clarcy, again, didn't arrive this summer, but for me, he is a talented player and a bit of proof that there's still value in the Dutch market. Burnley, I think... Burnley will always work hard this season. That's a guarantee I think you will find with them. There will be instances where that industry will simply be outperformed by superior talent, and that's what essentially happened today.
Southampton up to eighth then, as you said, Chris, flying under radar somewhat. I think some people sort of doubting them at the start of the season when Claude Puel came in. People again questioning, you know, the turnover of staff, the turnover of managers. Can they steady themselves? And every year they seem to do it. They're unbeaten in 9 Premier League games at home so far. So a very impressive run stretching back to last season for them. The final Premier League game of the weekend to discuss is Middlesbrough 0, Watford 1.
It was a classic in all the worst ways. I think Middlesbrough, I think Karanka's a little bit too stubborn for his own good. I think he's so set on the system and the players that he likes, he's not willing to switch it around. I think a good example of that is Adama Traore, who, granted, you talk to any Villa fan, they'll tell you he is pace, he's energy, he can dribble, he can't do much else after that, in the sense that his end product is severely lacking. I don't think that's going to change if you keep giving him 10, 15 minutes to try and do something. I would argue he needs a little bit longer. And you compare him with Christian Stuani, who I think started the season well. You know, he managed to chip in with the odd goal now and again. I think he got one against Sunderland. Was it one? No, it was 2-2, wasn't it? Yeah, it was 2-2. He got the goals against Sunderland. But that shouldn't buy you forever, because this is the thing with Middlesbrough. They have to establish themselves early on if they want to stay in this division past this season. And going back down again will be, I think, a much bigger drop for a club like them than anyone else, because I don't think they have players that would be happy to hang around in that division.
You'd expect them to try to establish strong home form to give them a chance of staying up. They've only actually won 1 point at home so far. Looking poor going forward as well. Alvaro Negredo, he scored on the opening day of the season. There was such optimism about him joining the club. Hasn't looked great since, it has to be said. But Watford, though, Lawrence.
Watford, though.
Looking good underwater, Matt Sarri. They're up to 10th in the table. An impressive start for them.
Yeah, beginning to shape up. The thing with Watford, I think the thing with a lot of Premier League sides this season is it's going to be more so than ever looking for the sides they can beat to try and remain up. And I think Matt Sarri is a manager I think a lot of people were very willing to sort of write off, and there was probably good reason for that. You know, they had a poor result against Burnley, but before that they had a fantastic result against Manchester United. They've been involved in some thrilling games this season, and early on I think they were able to exploit certain weaknesses of certain sides. I think Matt Sarri is very good at doing that, but I think there are going to be a few matches this season where teams are left frustrated. I'm actually really looking forward to the next game, which is Watford against, I think they're away to Swansea. There was a reason that I was looking through Swansea's fixtures for this. They're away to Swansea. And that's going to be a really interesting match, because obviously they come up against Bob Bradley, and there's going to be the ultimate motivation there that actually it's someone that Bob Bradley probably feels he can line up quite confidently against. So that's going to be a great match. And I think probably a truer test of where Watford are this season than maybe Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough away to Arsenal next weekend, so things don't get any easier. Right, that's all the Premier League action rounded up. Join us in part two, where we're talking Blackpool, FIFA, Mauro Icardi, and looking forward to Liverpool, Manchester United. Blackpool, Lawrence, talk to me.
Yeah, well, obviously everyone knows the situation with Carl Oyston over there. We've covered it quite a lot on the podcast, how frustrating it's been for the Blackpool fans. They've slowly seen their club slip away from them. Oyston, who was banned last year for calling the fan a massive retard, thick twat, special needs fucktard. And he apparently is still looking to sue 10 of 150 of the fans who invaded the pitch during a protest in last year. Apparently says the rest will stay banned until they sign an acceptable behaviour order. One thing that Charlton's owners have also done, and we all know what happened at Charlton at the weekend, where 3,000 plastic pigs were thrown onto the pitch.
Yeah,
I think these are, if I'm completely honest, I support each one of these protests.
Yeah, because when you see the owners, especially in the case of Blackpool, treat their fans with such contempt, how could you not support what the fans are doing?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the fans are looking to take the club back. And a great way to take a club back is to stop the product that these guys are trying to sell from happening, because it will make them more difficult to work with. So I agree with the way they're going about it, to be honest. You can't hijack a club. That's part of the problem, is I think a lot of owners sort of think, well, you know, at least we can continue with the football. Okay, great. Then play behind closed doors and see how much longer that continues, because your product changes. I think that's the problem is, you know, as much as we talk about the hot air that fan channels sort of throw out there about the fans being the most important voice, which is partly true, but I think some people are capitalizing on that cynically. You know, others are sort of embracing that. And I think, you know, that the point is with fans is that they are in the stadium. They do have a physical presence, and that does make a big difference, not only to the club, but the players as well. And I think the players know that the fans are frustrated. That must be, you know, there's something there for us to get behind and support, you know, even if it is a temporary cause and something which we hope is going to change soon.
If you didn't see the Charlton protest, I'm sure you did. But it was a joint protest of Charlton and Coventry fans suspending play essentially by throwing, as Lawrence says, the small plastic pigs onto the pitch as a symbol of, will the owners ever change their ways? Pigs might fly. Therefore, you know, it makes sense. But yeah, as you say, Lawrence, great for them to stand up to the owners of their club. I mean, Charlton have done a number of protests recently, a number of memorable protests. So long may it continue until hopefully there are changes at the club.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Elsewhere, FIFA. We briefly discussed last week on the pod, I believe, the notion of the new president, Gianni Infantino, wanting to expand the World Cup to 48 teams. But that's not the only changes that he's looking to make, is it, Lawrence?
No. In what they're calling FIFA 2.0, the vision for the future.
It's a nice hollow rebranding there. Like that.
Do you think that it'll be better to stop calling it FIFA?
Just completely change the name and hope that everyone forgets?
I mean, literally, the irony would be that actually they should upgrade and call it Pro Evolution Soccer.
I'm not sure Konami would be, they wouldn't be over the moon with that, I'm sure.
Well, no, it would also mean that they'd also lost some of the rights to the names and then have to start calling some of the teams like Man Red,
but
etc.
They call it FIFA 2.0, Lawrence, as you said. Changing the name, But has anything else changed? I mean,
well, he said he's drawing under a line under a tough run of disputed headlines. He says over the Panama Papers, "I go my way. We have embraced reforms. We have embraced transparency. We have embraced good governance. We have turned a page." In a way.
Have we seen the opposite of that, though, Lawrence?
Well, I suppose we wouldn't have, because obviously, you know, if we didn't see transparency, by the very inherent nature of a lack of transparency, we wouldn't know. So that's part of the problem, is that actually, it's all well and good to go, "I'm being more transparent," but don't look over there. The problem is that essentially, if that was the case, then we maybe wouldn't see some of the World Cup still in the same places. We'd be they'd be asking much wider questions. And again, it sort of seems like we're doing the bare minimum to change, but there are still massive problems which still need to be addressed. And that's maybe part of the problem, is that, you know, it's all well and good sort of saying from here on out, we'll be completely transparent, but we'll still continue with some of the old policies because we've signed contracts on them. You can't really do that. There are some funny ones. Helping define new era, the Secretary General, Fatma, I want to say Samora, says, revealing how FIFA saved £99,500 last week by using a cheaper five-star hotel for executives, apparently mainly because they didn't want to stay in the same hotel because apparently all the hotels that people were sort of arrested in have become soiled in a way. That money will be invested in football. And apparently they leaked information 5 months ago on Infantino's expenses, including a £1,100 tuxedo, which actually sounds pretty reasonable, £660 on flowers. That sounds more unreasonable. On top of his 1.15 basic salary and all those bonuses of car and house, and apparently has a pretty reasonable monthly allowance as well of about £1,500. So yeah,
business as usual. I think
it's not going well, let's put it that way.
My absolute favorite story about FIFA expenses was the Russian, I believe it was a member of the Russian FA who who had sort of taken exception to the English press calling out corruption in the Russian FA. He wasn't having any of it. But it turned out that, you know, a few days later it came out that he'd claimed for 100 breakfasts during a 20-day trip to Canada. So it was just like the most brazen, just like, you know, just did not care whatsoever.
I mean, that really is of another 100. Level, isn't it?
Yeah. Did he also bring his own plate with him?
Yeah. It was a 12-inch plate.
I think he might have. Moving on. Mauro Icardi has also been in the news, Chris.
So he had a bit of a falling out with Inter's ultras after a 3-1 defeat to Sassuolo, because the way he tells the story is he went to give his shirt to a small child who'd asked for it in the crowd. And this is what he claims, is that the ultras snatched it away and threw it back. And he said that in the wake of that, his teammates all considered him a hero because he stood up to the ultras and no player had really done that, and et cetera, et cetera. And this was all written in a book that he's just released, and he's just been pimping around Milan at the minute with some signings and things like that.
Probably not the best race to use, but all right.
And he also said in the book that if it was kind of... Actually, I don't know if it was in the book, so apologies for that, I'll retract that. He had also said, though, that if the ultras wanted to kind of start something, for want of a better phrase, you know, he would bring, I think he said, 100 criminals from Argentina and have them all killed and kind of, well, you know, we'll see how tough they really are. And understandably, Inter's ultras and Curvasso didn't take too kind of kindly to this. And so they displayed a banner at the weekend that essentially called him a little piece of shit and said, you know, you've used this child as some kind of excuse, you're not a captain, you're not a man, etc., etc., because they claim the story is completely fictitious, that there was no child or anything like that. To top things off, he misses a penalty, and the Inter fans actually cheer him missing a penalty, to kind of highlight the division between the ranks, I guess. Icardi is such a funny, complicated guy. Yes, as you alluded to there, the whole Wanda Nara thing, that isn't very pretty. That isn't exactly the easy situation to navigate. He's already said sorry for it, for the comments relating to the criminals. I sense on the back of advice from Zanetti, who said, we will be talking to him about this. There will be consequences for this, because you can't treat the fans that way. They are the, I don't think he said lifeblood of the club, but he made statements to that end. It's just very stupid. I think the only positive to come from it potentially is if you're a club in England looking for a forward, because while he did just sign a new contract recently until, I want to say, 2021, I don't think Inter would be terribly disappointed if a bid came in from now, because I imagine fans would really want to put pressure on that deal to be done. He is in fine goal-scoring form, though. I don't think you can contest that. He's a wonderful goal scorer. It does very much seem like it was just last year or just yesterday I was watching him for Sampdoria when he came on to the league. And he's one of those very typical situations of a player that is exceptionally talented, but has the potential to be a bit of a knob as well, for one of the better phrases.
Yeah. Happens quite a lot in Italy, though, doesn't it? It's a bit of a weird one.
Well, I mean, look, the thing with the Maxi Lopez thing, that did kind of hang over him for a while. I don't necessarily think it was entirely because of who he was shacking up with. I think they've got married, they're having a child together now. So you would argue, yes, you know, this was not a fling. He didn't essentially destroy a friendship over a short-term thing. The issue, personally, that I find a little bit unsettling is how readily he paraded Lopez's children around, because yeah, I think that's a little bit disingenuous to him as a father. Now, granted, people who support Icardi will tell you that actually Maxi Lopez wasn't the greatest dad, he wasn't the greatest husband, and a lot of the sympathy that's fostered for him is very misguided. I think the truth lies in the middle, and I think, honestly, Icardi can still be an arse and Lopez can still be a bad husband, and in equal measure, the two ideas can coexist in the same space.
So you're not peacefully?
I don't think anything exists peacefully in that situation at the minute. It's not fun. I mean, that's the thing. Like I say, Icardi is a very good footballer, and if I was Arsenal, I'd be tempted to ask into how much they want for him, personally.
Mm. Welcome back to the Rumorator. It's Monday morning and Adam Boltwood needs content. Starting off,
like you said, Chris, it is on the pitch he produces the results, but off the pitch it just seems he can't help but attract criticism, really.
But because he's so good, he'll not be short of offers. I mean, if you want to be hypothetical for a second, if Inter turn around and say, okay, look, we're just going to release you, we don't like you anymore, just get lost, he would have a wealth of clubs. I mean, even if Inter said, look, we want 40 for him, 40 million euros, he'd have a lot of... If I remember right, the fee that was quoted in the summer was around 53 million. When you consider that Higuain went for double that, and you look at some of the prices being paid for strikers, it's not the worst deal in the world. He's got a long, long part of his career left ahead of him.
There were reports last week that Messi isn't a fan either. Those are the reasons that he's not in the Argentina squad, Icardi, because Messi said, "Nah, he's not coming in, mate. I'm not a fan of what he's been doing." Always attracting controversy.
But then, in some regards, that's kind of the interesting, to digress just briefly, that's probably one of the interesting dynamics of the Argentine national team, is that, let's, again, for argument's sake, say it's Icardi running through at the Copa America in the summer against Chile. There's a good chance he scores that and they lift a trophy. So, again, it's one of those things where I imagine I'm not the first person to voice this opinion. If someone could just get a hold of him, perhaps his wife or his agent, or wait, that's the same person, could just grab a hold of him and him to settle down.
I don't think she's going to have a good perspective on the situation, as you allude to there.
She's a bloody agent, mate. I fucking hope she does.
Let's move on finally then to talk about Liverpool Manchester United. We had a little preview on Wednesday. Dave and Lawrence put their bets on. They made a score prediction. But coming up close to the game, Lawrence, it's an exciting one, because for so long, I don't know about you as a Liverpool fan, but it's felt like Liverpool Man United is talked up as the biggest game in England historically. The two teams are most successful in England. When they face off, it's always seen as such a huge fixture. But it's been lacking that box office the last few years, be it the players out on the pitch, be it the managers. It just didn't seem to have that allure. But Monday night, Liverpool on form, talk of a title challenge. Jurgen Klopp's there. The players are starting to perform. You've got Mourinho at Manchester United. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the big names. It's mouthwatering, really, isn't it?
Yeah, for a long time, it was more self-adulation, I think, than anything else. Sort of like, we are still the big boys, you know, we're still relevant. I think a lot of people did still look forward to it because, I think there was a lot of frustration around the fixture. There was people tried to almost bill it as the kind of thing where it was a bit more like a Rangers v Celtic sort of tie. And in many ways, I think it was because there were, you know, there's a big, long history there. We always hear from certain people about, because that's all they've got. And I think now going into it, there is something real in the now for both sides. I think Sadio Mane actually just said, I think I read it earlier in the Liverpool Echo, he basically just said, we're going to beat United. And I was a bit like, I'm not sure I 100% appreciate that as a view, because obviously that can have the impact that, you know, if you do end up losing, then, you know, it comes back to bite you. But I guess I do also appreciate the brazen approach. And I think tactically, you know, we've already looked at that a little bit. But I think, you know, Liverpool are in a really good place. I will be interested to see how Mourinho shuts them down and uses the likes of Pogba, et cetera, in midfield to get away. It is going to be fascinating. And also the fact it's Anfield is a great tie.
Mm. And there was actually a story that emerged a couple of days ago. I believe it was on joe.co.uk, Tony Barrett, with the report about how Jose Mourinho was almost Liverpool manager once upon a time.
It's a bit of a funny one because Mourinho has since sort of said in the press that he would never be Liverpool manager for very specific reasons that only he knows and Liverpool know. I don't know necessarily what that means, whether that's got anything to do with the situation or something else, but apparently what Barrett calls a full charm offensive was gone on when Mourinho and his agent were in the country before he signed for Chelsea. Because apparently he wanted to go to Liverpool. I partly breathe a bit of a sigh of relief, actually, that he didn't, because I see what state he left Chelsea in and what state he leaves a couple of other clubs in. And actually, I'm kind of happy.
Premier League titles and trophies and stuff.
Well, I mean, I see what you're saying, Chris, but at the same time, you know, have Chelsea fully recovered as a side ever from the first time that Mourinho was there?
And no, when they won stuff. Surely that's the... The
aim
number one, no?
Yeah, but I mean, well, no, not really. Because
not to win stuff.
Not to win stuff.
You're talking about short-termism, essentially, Chris.
Well, the short-termism of winning stuff is obviously the immediate aim. But I think maybe, and I think that's probably where Liverpool as a club market themselves differently, because of, you know, they talk about heritage, all those sort of things, what they've done in the past. I don't know if Mourinho is also the sort of best fit as a manager, because I think, you know, it probably would have made Liverpool fans fucking insufferable. Because if you, you know, combine an arsehole with some of those other fans who just love to chat shit, then that becomes difficult. At the same time, I think it sort of goes against in the past what the Liverpool fans like to believe the club is built on, which is, I don't even know if that is true. I don't know how much of it still holds because of capitalism, those sort of things, but sort of this club for everyone. And I don't know if Mourinho fully embraces or embodies those ideas at every club he's been to. He seems a little bit more like a gun for hire. And I think that's probably why now that contrast of having Jurgen Klopp there allows them to almost feel a bit like they're taking the moral high ground, or sort of, you know, this is our guy, that's your guy. And there is a big contrast between Klopp and Mourinho, and even the perception, even if it's really just marketing, which differentiates the truth. And genuinely, as a Liverpool fan, I would rather not have a Premier League title and avoid Mourinho than have a Premier League title and have won it with a manager that I don't feel particularly affectionate about now. I guess my view is just
the club's never won a Premier League title. I don't think beggars can be choosers at this point.
But I don't know if I'm begging for a Premier League title, is what I'm saying.
No, but the club is, though. That's the point.
I don't know.
So much of the heritage you talk about is founded on success and being the best. And they haven't been the best.
Not really. Not really.
In at least over a decade.
I mean.
And that's assuming that you consider the Champions League as a marker that you are the best in Europe. After that, they came exceptionally close with the Premier League title under Rodgers, who really is in a similar school to Mourinho in a lot of ways. He's not as heavily invested in the psychological games, but he certainly believes his own hype. The difference is that Mourinho has a fairly stellar CV to back it up.
Yeah, but I mean, Chris, you can't really say that Rodgers and Mourinho are in a similar... You know, you're almost baiting someone here to...
No, I'm not saying they're identical. I would say there's similarities in the sense that they both believe they are special.
Well, they're both ego. I mean, to say
they're both founded in ego.
The point would be that Roger, there is a sort of naivety about Rogers which makes him a little less.
Yeah, naivety or ignorance.
I mean, those two go hand in hand essentially. But I mean, even then, you'd say that, you know, if, I guess that's Liverpool fans then. You know, a lot of them are going to be talking about great wins, those sort of things. But I guess you could also talk about just atmosphere, people. You know, when they talk about Shankly, I don't know how many people even talk about all the wins. I guess that's the problem, is that actually, you know, you need someone who's going to line up with the way that you market your club. And I don't know if the marketing of Mourinho or the marketing of, to put it very bluntly, the marketing of Mourinho and marketing of Liverpool go hand in hand. I don't. Also, I think that's we've extolled the virtues on a documentary over the past few weeks of Jurgen Klopp and how well he lines up with Liverpool, because, you know, Liverpool need a messiah. I think you're right in saying that Liverpool probably would have embraced him and there would have been a match there, because Mourinho loves himself, especially as the idea of a messiah and someone who's run off an ego side of things. But I definitely think that Klopp feels like a better fit, and at the same time, I think most people would say in the next few years. You know, if Klopp plays great football and gives Liverpool fantastic memories in those times, then as hard as it's going to be to sort of go out and sort of say to people, well, they didn't win anything in that time, despite their exuberant confidence, still probably something there that people can be proud of, I guess, which is great football and some really good memories, which is essentially, you know, why people still have confidence in Jurgen Klopp now, because of some of the memories that he's already given them from last season, which is above... That's the problem, is actually, you know, you'd imagine that some of those memories for Chelsea fans and for other fans that he's been at their club of may be a little soiled because of the way that he left the team. The funny thing is also, obviously, that he then would have been at Anfield under a previous ownership, and we all know how that ownership broke down. So, you know, there would have been, and that would have been even more dramatic. You know, the good thing for Liverpool at the time was actually that their manager was not someone who was particularly vocal. You know, it was Benitez. He was sort of manoeuvred out of the club, and there were a lot of politics that went on behind closed doors. And you get the feeling that Mourinho wouldn't have allowed that to happen, and it could have been more of a self-destruct button. I mean, you know, we don't know that, 'cause it never happened, but, you know, a lot of destruction happened at Liverpool in a very short space of time. And it still could happen now. I mean, you know, Souness was saying over the past week that his main worry is that Liverpool might just burn out coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, did you make of... We heard Jurgen Klopp make a few comments before the game, hitting out of the Christmas schedule along those lines, essentially saying that Liverpool are going to have to play twice within 48 hours over Christmas, saying that he's not happy with those fixtures, saying that essentially they could risk injuries. I mean, did you see him hit out of the... He hit out a particular... journalist. Did you see this, Lawrence?
I didn't see which journalist he is out at in particular.
So he's not a journalist. He's a fitness coach.
He hit out a guy called...
That guy. He's a gun for hire. He's a gun for hire. He's a voice for hire.
And he's basically been... He's been on social media a few times. Not just to hit out at Klopp. There's certain other managers, but he's always commenting upon injuries in Jurgen Klopp's teams, essentially saying that the reason there are these injuries, the reason there are hamstring injuries is Jurgen Klopp's fault, essentially, the way he pushes the team too hard. So sort of calling him out, Jurgen Klopp saying, you know, these fixtures come along, 2 and 48 hours, we'll get injuries. Some Dutch guy will have a poke at me on Twitter, all this sort of stuff. So it might be, as well as Souness highlighting it, do you think it's at the back of Klopp's mind? Or
I don't think it's the back. I think it's at the front of Klopp's mind, because it's part of his responsibility to keep a squad fit over an entire season. I guess what comes with Klopp, and having spoken to people about his awareness and self-awareness over the past few weeks, is he realizes the public forum in which this is playing out in, and that if someone else, you know, I think what he's trying to do there is acknowledge that there is criticism of him, but not necessarily give it too much importance, because I mean, I guess that's the problem as a manager, is that actually, you know, you realize you're the only one who truly knows what's going on within the club. It also does seem like a very sort of easy conclusion to make. You know, he's pushing them very hard, therefore they will get tired. I mean, yeah, but I guess you have criticisms either way of Klopp, and also of anyone analyzing from the outside without any great amount of data. Mm. Because there are a number of clubs where players don't allegedly get pushed very hard and they still get injuries.
It's true. It's true. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, we've spoken about before how, not burnout, but Pochettino's Spurs teams the past two seasons have, they've slowed down essentially towards the end of the season. It has.
I also think it's emotional burnout for some of those players as well.
Potentially. On Liverpool, though, I mean, you made your score prediction, Lawrence. You're confident. Chris, are you going for a Liverpool win?
Yes.
I think it makes sense. They're going in as favourites. I'll say 2-1. I think you said 2-1 as well, didn't you, Lawrence?
Yeah, mainly because I was backed into a corner.
Pressured into it.
but yeah, sure.
You were peer pressured into giving us a score prediction.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, let us know how you think it's going to end up on Twitter at The Front Three. Send in your questions and comments for Wednesday's midweek podcast as well. Remember to leave your reviews on iTunes before then for your chance to be comment of the week. Until Wednesday, Chris, where can the good listeners find more of you?
Twitter at KHENEAGE. Should be dropping something on Torgan Hazard this week. Ooh. Possibly even something on Mr. Mauro Icardi. Oh,
that's a lovely little tease. And Lozcast, where can people find you?
You'll find me on Monday night on TFR, live covering the Liverpool Manchester United game. So you'll see all the bets going on there. Lozcast, LOZCAST on Twitter. Go and give me a listen there. And you'll also see all of our previews for the Champions League going out on Twitter. So head over to the Twitter if you don't already follow us there. It's great.
Check out Lawrence on TFR Live on Monday night alongside Cheeksball Dave, I believe.
Oh, hello.
Man United v Liverpool, you see. It all makes sense. Do go over to the Football Republic. Do subscribe there. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. Until Wednesday, enjoy Manchester United, Liverpool.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.